If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East.
Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. We have such a fun show for you today. We're going to have a good time on this Friday with two super smart, funny ladies. From culture to health to fashion, hint, cracks are back. Did you know that? There's a little bit of everything for everyone. Here to discuss, Mary Catherine Hamm, host of Getting Hammered and author of the book End of Discussion, and Bridget Fetisee, comedian and host of the podcasts Walk-ins Welcome and Dumpster Fire. As we approach another critical election, many Americans are concerned. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming election. But look, I want to tell you about AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC is more than a senior organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense. They're going to help eliminate that dread you're feeling. And they fight for the U.S. to return to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/Megyn today to get an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. As an AMAC member, you not only enjoy money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution. Join now at amac.us/Megyn. That's amac.us/MEGYN. Ladies, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
There's such goodness to go through. I don't even know where to begin. So I'm going to start with the earthquake. Did you guys feel the earthquake? Anybody feel it?
Not here. I was actually driving.
Are you down in, MK, are you down in the Mid-Atlantic? Are you down by DC?
Yeah. So I'm actually in Pennsylvania today. So I probably should have felt it, but I was driving. So you don't usually feel it in that situation.
And where are you, Bridget?
I'm in Texas. So we're getting ready for the eclipse.
Yeah. That's right. You didn't. All right. Right. Okay. So here in Connecticut, I felt it. And I know people in California are like, shut up. But they get it all the time. They get it in much bigger, you know, magnitudes. But for us in the Northeast, it's very rare. The last and maybe only other earthquake I felt, maybe one when I was a kid in New York, but I was out in Montana. So it's like, you know, it's rare to happen in the Northeast. And I was sitting there getting ready in our little studio cottage. And, you know, it started shaking. The house started shaking, this little cottage. And it's not sturdy. I mean, it's small. And I was like, this thing could come down. I guess I'm not sure. First, you're thinking it's like a huge semi that went by. And then all my years in New York are like, is that the number 6 train going? But no, wait, there's no subway near me. And then you're like, this actually might be an earthquake. What in the? And sure enough, it was. It was, I think, a 4.7 magnitude earthquake. Very fun for us Northeasterners, though I hope everybody's okay. Okay.
Did that CERN start up again? The CERN thing, the like collider that they have? Did that start again?
What's that?
It's like
that
where they collide all the atoms, and I think they're starting it up again soon.
Look, we're dealing with an earthquake and an eclipse. I can't deal with a collider as well. It's too much.
It is. It's pretty biblical. I'm going to start with a touch of hard news. It's not hard, but it's like kind of interesting. The Rock appears to regret his endorsement of Joe Biden back in 2020. I can't believe this happened. I was shocked, right? I was like, could it be? Could he actually have spoken out in this way? He did. He spoke with one of my favorite people over at Fox, Will Cain. And listen to what he said.
Am I happy with the state of America right now? Well, that answer is no. Do I believe we're going to get better? I believe in that. I'm an optimistic guy, and I believe we can get better. The endorsement that I made years ago with Biden was one I thought was the best decision for me at that time. And I thought back then, when we talk about, hey, you know, I'm in this position where I have some influence, and it's my job then. I felt like that then. It's my job now to exercise my influence and share with this is who I'm going to endorse. Am I going to do that again this year? That answer is no. Didn't realize it then. I just thought, hey, our country feels like there's a lot of unrest. It feels like I would like things to calm down. Maybe we need a change. This is what I'm going to do, and this is who I'm going to endorse. Months and months and months, I started to realize, like, oh, man, that caused an incredible amount of division in our country. So I realize now going into this election, I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't do that because my goal is to bring our country together. I do trust the American people, and I trust that whoever they vote for, that's going to be my president, and that's who I'm going to support 100%.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. What do you make of them, Kay?
Have you seen how much it costs to buy protein at this point and how much The Rock has to consume? Okay. So even with the paychecks he's taken home, it's going to be a hit, right? Look, I think that The Rock, despite the size of his arms, is like normie adjacent. He is a person who seems sort of like a red-blooded American who kind of gets normal things. And I think the feeling that he's feeling is, well, I was pitched normalcy. And I endorsed this guy who I thought would be that person. And I'm in the gym and I'm paying triple for my protein. And it's not feeling like I wanted it to feel. And I imagine it feels worse for other people. So I think it's a an unrealized promise of normalcy and feeling better that he's tuning into there.
It's so rare that you have one of these so-called elites, Bridget. You know, in his own way, he's an elite, given the huge amount of money he's earned and what a huge star he is and the circles of power that he likely travels in terms of getting movies made and so on, to have them come out and say something like this, because make no mistake about it, there will be blowback to The Rock in those circles for even going this far.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like he's been red-pilled, you know, somewhat.
Yes,
even if he's not outright saying it, it does sound like a man who, so he's not saying he will, is he saying he won't endorse anybody in this coming election? He's just going to trust the American people. But,
yes, and that he regrets having endorsed the last time around, that it caused more division to come out in favor.
So he's not saying kind of the quiet part, which is that he's okay with Trump or okay with people who vote for Trump, which is you can't say that in Hollywood, even that, like you said, Megan. But I think his audience is more normie. So he's also responding to the fact that there just is a common sense coalition of people who really don't feel represented by mostly anyone, and The Rock is he's kind of right over the target.
It's amazing because, like, he's had it. He's feeling what so many people are feeling, which is the country's in trouble, and maybe we do need. Maybe he likes RFKJ. We don't know if it's Trump, but it certainly sounds like it's not going to be Biden this time around. And I was thinking, MK, because the Biden administration is like begging Taylor Swift for an endorsement. Right. So how do you like those? Like, what if The Rock actually does signal more that he's on the other team? He's on, you know, either Trump. And then you got Taylor versus The Rock going. Now that's a contest we can get behind.
That's a very serious contest. Honestly, I might prefer that one at the ballot box. But look, I think what he's communicating is something that a lot of regular voters feel, which is that, look, maybe they're not in love with the Trump choice, but they understand why people would make it, because they're looking at what happened under Biden. That is a very normal sentiment. And there are plenty of places in our elite circles where they act like that's some giant puzzle. It's not a giant puzzle. I was listening to a Chuck Todd segment with some analysts today, and they were just scratching their heads, just noodling over, like, why aren't the American people understanding how amazing everything is and all these accomplishments? It's like, maybe it's not messaging it correctly. Not one person thinks maybe it's because they're hurting. Maybe it's because these solutions didn't help. But yes, the other thing I was going to say, this big celebrity fundraiser that they did up in New York, where they made a bunch of money, but it felt very different from the Obama years, right? It felt lackluster. I looked at the comments on a Vogue Instagram post about it, and if your Vogue Instagram post has all negative comments about a gathering of Obama, Clinton, and Biden, it's not good for you. It's not good for you. And they're coming from left and right.
Yeah.
Wow. What were they saying?
Well, from the left, it was genocide, genocide, genocide. From the right, or you haven't done anything for me. And from the right, it was like, hey, maybe check on the border, guys, since there's three of you presidents together. And economy stuff. But I just think,
or
like,
maybe do the 20-minute drive to Officer Diller's wake. How about that? You know,
that's an option.
Pay your respects to this.
And by the way, something the Rock would understand is visiting that that wake.
Exactly right. All right. So on the subject of presidential politics, the likely next president, Kamala Harris, if Joe Biden gets reelected anyway, has spoken out. She's very interested in NCAA basketball. Do you guys have brackets going?
I'm superstitious, so I don't usually do a bracket, but I'm rooting for this the Wolfpack all the way through.
Okay, I've got UConn winning the whole thing, and I'm looking good. They won the whole thing last year, but I only picked UConn because my system is, as between any two teams, whether it's at the beginning or going into the Final Four, you fill out those brackets. I pick the team that I have a connection to, either geographically or emotionally. And if I have no connection to either of the team, I just go with whatever the ranking is, whoever's better. And I have to say, my Final Four, I do well in this system every year. I beat most of the men I know who are neck deep in basketball. It works. I'll get back to you on how this year goes. But Kamala Harris, it's possible that she's even less connected to the basketball world than I am, because she came out trying to have a she-woman moment, you know, feminist hero moment, and weighed in on NCAA women's basketball and the tournament, and made the following untrue claim, speaking with Spectrum News. Okay, she says, do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know, we don't have this on tape, do we? Oh yeah, we do have it on tape because it was a written interview, but we've got the actual shot. Listen, shot one.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that, and what that, talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress, and what that has done, because of course, when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But you know what, just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets, and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered, you know, and this is the reality. People used to say, oh, women's sports, who's interested? Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh.
So glad we got to hear that. First of all, why is she talking with her hands up here, right? Why is she doing this thing with her hands, like, you know, crocodile hands, right? Like when people won't reach for the bill. It's very strange that she's got the hands up here. But secondly, fact check, the first NCAA women's tournament was in 1982. They had brackets. They had brackets in 82, at least regionally. And then by 1996, they had them nationally, identical to the way the men do. So it wasn't even, like, in 1996, I had just graduated law school. Like, that's a long time ago. It's been a long time since we've had them, but she's got to give us her little lesson with her. It's, you know what it's like? It's like Violet Beauregard after she blows up into the blueberry, like with the little hands. That's how she talks.
It's wild though. Like, who's briefing her? Who decided that this was a talking point? Like, they have to play in petticoats until 1994 and you weren't allowed to have brackets, and women couldn't use pens to fill out the brackets. Their husbands had to do it for them in pencil. I mean, it is just completely made up. I mean, I actually enjoy this more than the days of the gaffes like Lambeau Field, which was John Kerry's Lambert Field when he called Lambeau that. This is so much more complex and rich stupidity, sports related. It's amazing. Rich.
So just to add to this, Zach Parkinson just tweets out, posts on X. Here's Harris in 2021, a year where women's college basketball supposedly was not allowed to have brackets, tweeting about her husband's women's bracket. So maybe it's a memory problem. Maybe she's having some of the same recall problems that her boss is having. But you know what? What's annoying to me about the clip, Bridget, is that everything for her has to get turned into a little teachable moment where you know, educator in chief Kamala Harris is going to explain to the rest of us dum-dums how life used to be and how we can then be unburdened by what has been. And mm-hmm. her new utopia version of the future in which women are equal and we finally get brackets, even though we've had them for the past 27 years or however long it's been. And we'll get to another place in which she's done this next with respect to Beyonce. But I'm kind of tired of her faux feminism, especially given the way Kamala Harris rose to the top out in California, which was under
Willie
Brown.
I'm convinced. Yeah, I'm convinced. I'm convinced that she's just trolling us. It seems like she watched Veep and she's just trying to be exactly Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character. How can you be this bad?
You're giving her a lot of credit.
It is amazing, though. It's like a glitching AI or something. And one of the things that's annoying about modern feminism is that they do this kind of thing where they say, like, there's suddenly a new women's superhero or whatever movie coming out, and they act like there's never been a woman right. in a superhero movie before, even though you had, like, Princess Leia in 1977, right, who was a real badass.
Terminator.
But they just pretend like all of that doesn't exist, and I don't appreciate that as a woman of the 80s. I enjoyed Linda Hamilton, thank you very much,
exactly.
and her biceps, they were inspiring to me.
Sigourney Weaver.
To all of us. Well, okay, so enter Beyonce, who is the modern day superhero for untold millions. I gotta be honest, I'm not a big Beyonce follower. I don't have anything against her. I don't listen to her music, but I do get kind of annoyed at how whenever she does anything, we have to pretend she's the second coming. It's like, right. oh my God, they literally call her Queen Bey. It's like she can do absolutely no wrong. If you criticize her, there's something wrong with you. Well, too bad. Deal with it. So she's come out now with a country album. And of course, these leftists and media whores pretend that no one's ever done country before Beyonce's done it. Country's this wonderful new genre that the Queen Bey has discovered. Oh my God, this is wonderful. Yeah. And the reactions to her album called Cowboy Carter, which just dropped, are, of course, typically over the top. Among others, who's weighed in on this? Michelle Obama decided to post about this, and Kamala Harris saying, "You have redefined a genre and reclaimed country music's Black roots." Why did country need to be redefined? Why? What was wrong with it that we needed it to be rescued by Beyonce, right? And that's the same message, basically, from Michelle Obama, who says, "Once again, you've helped redefine a music genre and transform our culture. You've transformed it. I'm so proud of you. Cowboy Carter is a reminder that despite everything we've been through, to be heard, seen, and recognized." I mean, she always finds a way to work how downtrodden she's been into her tweets and posts. "We can still dance, sing, and be who we are unapologetically." I'm sure it's very hard for Beyonce to be who she is unapologetically with her billions of dollars that she's earned and her husband has earned, despite how crappily this nation has treated her. "This album reminds us all that we all have power. There's power in our history, in our joy, and in our vote." And of course, it goes on to, "Together we can stand up for what we believe in. We must do that at the ballot box. And as Queen Bey says at the end of Yaya, we need to keep the faith and vote." What is this? Is this feminism? Is this aggrievement? And why is it that Queen Bey is being treated like she's the first one to take a little dalliance over into this weird, heretofore unknown field of country music?
Yeah. My take on this is, like, we don't have to do this, guys. We don't have to do it. Like Beyonce, fine. I like country music, like some more than others, whether it comes to Beyonce's catalog or country music, right? But this thing where we have to be like, it's compulsory worship of this moment, I don't think we need to do that. And I don't think it has to be this. It could just be like a decent album, but we don't really do that in our culture anymore.
We have to make it into something so much bigger. One of the things that jumped out at me on this is, like, how well she lays out, like, her PR connections when she drops this album. Like, she has a cover, and we're going to talk about it, of Jolene by Dolly Parton. She gets Dolly Parton to endorse it on the album. Dolly Parton does an intro. Then publicly, she says something endorsing it. She sings. Blackbird by Paul McCartney, and or at least uses a piece of it. And she gets Paul McCartney to write out. I'm so happy with Beyonce's version of Blackbird. I think she's done a fab version and would urge anyone who has not heard it yet to check it out. Then there's Linda Martrell, legendary country artist. What she's doing is beautiful. I'm honored to be a part of it. Then there's Nancy Sinatra because she uses a piece of These Boots Are Made for Walking. I love her. This may be the best sample of boots yet. Yes, Nancy, even better than yours. Go ahead and lick the boots a little harder. See what that gets you. And then we get to Jolene, which everybody loves. Who doesn't love Dolly Parton's version of, or I mean, it's her song, of Jolene? For those of you who don't know it, and I'm sure I'm speaking to like two people, here's right. A little sample of the OG.
But I can easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene.
Okay, I'm going to talk about and recommend to everybody this Kat Rosenfield piece in Unheard today, because she nailed exactly my own sort of inner reaction to the new Beyonce take on this. The original Jolene is a story about a woman feeling threatened by another woman who's prettier and more alluring, and she's basically begging her not to steal her man. That, you know, she can do it. She flatters her. I know you can. You're so gorgeous and you've got the, you know, red hair and the green eyes. And I know what you're capable of, but please don't, because I love him and I could never love anybody as much. Then, of course, because it's Queen Bey, we have to change it to, if you fucking take my man, I will hurt you, bitch. She actually uses the word bitch in the new version. And it's much more like threatening, which I guess Beyonce and Team Bey think is what empowerment looks like. For now, the threatened woman is just threatening to another woman who she thinks might have designs on her life partner. Here's Beyonce's version.
I can easily understand why you're attracted to my man. But you don't want the smoke to shoot your shot with someone else.
I love that.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm warning you, woman, find you your own man.
Okay. So it's got a lot of that in there. And I have to say, I don't find this empowering at all. And I think to Kat Rosenfield's point, there's something strange about what's happening with the modern day definition of what a strong woman is. Like, you can't have any vulnerabilities or insecurities. You have to be this badass bitch who's like threatening, like, fucking A, you know, you mess with my man. To me, it's a turnoff. And actually, Bridget, what Kat says, and I totally agree with this, she says, paradoxically, this reveals how disempowered and insecure Beyonce is in this messaging. If she's a queen, as the song says, and has no doubts about her man's devotion, then why is she threatening to throw hands at any woman who looks at him sideways? And I was thinking the same thing myself. The true power move is not to worry and not to have to worry. But yeah. Beyonce couldn't quite get there.
Well, what bugs me about both these versions is they really never take, like, hold the man to any account.
Right.
And they're yeah. never really saying anything about the man or to the man. But I also, I find it interesting, even if I don't agree that it's necessarily the most empowering, it seems like it's just a different variation of female insecurity that's kind of shape-shifted over time. Dolly Parton came from a different time. It was a more modest and subdued time. And Beyonce is of the yes queen feminism. And I think that that kind of in your face version is, it's still just female insecurity. I've definitely seen that in my life. I've been on the other side of it. And I think there's parts of me that have tried to be like, don't get in my way. Or, I mean, I'm not very threatening. Who am I kidding? But, but I do, I think it's like a female, it's interesting to me that this is just a, it's a more modern female. It still strikes me as insecurity. It's all just female insecurity.
Yes. That's, I mean, honestly, what woman who's in a real good, healthy relationship is running around threatening other hot women? I'll beat you up if you take my man. That's, I don't get, like, I feel like Beyonce would have been better served by just redoing it. You're not, you don't have to tell your story, right? Obviously, right. She was cheated on by Jay-Z. She's written about it. She's been singing about it for many years now. You don't have to tell your story. You're telling a story. And this is a version of womanhood where an insecure woman feels threatened by a more beautiful other woman. And as Kat writes in her piece, almost savvily figures out a way to land it, not by shaming the man, not by threatening the woman, but with flattery of this beautiful threat, MK, and yes, a plea to stay out of it, which is much more complex and interesting.
Well, you know, as a woman who many women come to me and say, you know you can take my man, but please don't. it happens on a daily basis. They're going to be in my Twitter feed right after this. I can say, no, look, I think the original Jolene is sad and deep. Like it's deeply sad song that she's having to do this. And that's what appeals to me.
And it's fascinating for that reason. Yeah,
yes, it's like psychologically interesting. Now, would I live my life more like the Beyonce version? Probably. I'm a little threatening.
Right.
I might be more that stuff.
Speaking of Melinda Hamilton years.
But I think there's a whole genre of country music in particular that can get very sad and a little pathetic sometimes. And I would argue that people shouldn't live their lives that way. But I enjoy the character drama of that sadness, of that pain. And that's what I reacted to in the original Jolene. Also, covering it just as Dolly Parton did means you have to compete with Dolly Parton, who is the Jolene of music. So there's that.
It's true. It's true. She begins her piece by, I don't know, did you guys see on X a couple like weeks ago, there have been some amazing pictures of Dolly Parton, you know, circa 1965 circulating, and she's absolutely stunning. We'll put one on this page for when we air this on YouTube. And she begins her piece by saying, not long ago, a post crossed my timeline featuring a black and white, heart-stoppingly gorgeous photo of Dolly Parton in the 60s. The caption read simply, what the hell did Jolene look like? One can only wonder. But her argument is follows. She says that we have replaced like certain models of female resilience with the quote, badass woman who has no feelings, who has no flaws, who has little use for other people except as either casual sex partners or punching bags, men in particular. And she writes, it's ironic in a world where women can pursue even more varied paths to fulfillment that the representation of female strength in art has become increasingly narrow, one-dimensional, and masculinized. The self-rescuing princess, who could forget the Snow White actress, right, out there, how much she hates Snow White. There's not going to be rescued by a prince. The emotionally aloof action heroine, the invulnerable, workaholic, commitment-phobic playgirl. An awful lot of strong female characters these days are basically just men with tits. This is such a good observation. She's right. This is a point I've been trying to make in different ways, which is people, why did we have to go from women shouldn't work, women should only have babies, women aren't strong, women are too emotional, women have to be locked up for their hysterics if they express tears or, you know, anxiety, to women have no emotion, women are total ball busters, and showing any softness, tears, empathy, vulnerability, insecurity, is somehow non-feminine and no longer acceptable in one's idea of what a woman is, what an ideal woman is.
Yeah, I think there's little flexibility often. It's like it's very confusing what the cultural message is. And even Beyonce herself has fallen into this trap. I wrote in I wrote about this in the past about the moment where she walked in front of that feminist sign at whatever it was, the MTV Awards or something, or maybe the Grammys. Yes. And it's just lit up in feminist behind her, and she's standing in front of it. It's very powerful. And then, like, shortly after that, she takes her husband's name and then uses it on a tour, and she got lambasted for doing that. It's like, there's a lot of ways to be we just, like, give ourselves that. I don't have to shoot for this C-suite, and I also don't have to only be at home. There's a real happy medium somewhere here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a swing and a miss. I think this guy from The Atlantic who reviewed Beyonce's cover of Jolene nailed it, where he wrote, Beyonce replaced the vulnerability that made Jolene one of the best tunes of all time with a bunch of bad bitch cliches. And if you listen to the whole song, all the lyrics are changed. She's changed the entire meaning of the song. But she's bastardized it because she's kept the name Jolene and the tune. But this is an entirely different message. And I don't buy it. I really don't buy it. Mm. I don't think Beyonce did beat up the woman who slept with Jay-Z. And I don't think it's empowering to threaten that she's going to beat up the next one. What's empowering is to know he would never do this to me. And I have zero worries about this kind of betrayal, because I've nurtured my relationship, because I'm an equal partner in it, because we have a loving partnership and marriage, which leads me to this nut over at The Cut. Oh my God, this is so good. My team has found the greatest articles for us to discuss today. Okay, let me find it. There is a woman. She wrote this lengthy piece in The Cut, which is an offshoot of New York Magazine. It has a benign headline: The Case for Marrying an Older Man. A woman's life is all work and little rest. An age gap relationship can help. All right. I don't know. Like, I didn't even click on this when I was like, oh, whatever. So there's nothing controversial about marrying somebody a little older. Right. Until you read the piece. Until you read the piece. Hold on a second. I don't have it. What's her name? We actually looked it up and we have her picture, which will become relevant. Grazie Sofia Christie. Grazie, Sofia Christie. And let me give you and the audience a taste of her argument. In sum, Grazie believes you should marry someone older and you should do it in your 20s so that he can teach you everything you need to know. You can have a divine time while you're young, and you can see beautiful places that match your exterior while it's still beautiful. Because there's a symmetry in that. You need to get to the Caribbean ASAP before your 30th birthday by marrying a rich older dude, because your pics are going to look better if you're still pretty. Okay? I'm going to give you a few highlights. When I was 20 and a junior at Harvard, which she gets in there, a series of great ironies began to mock me. I could diligently craft an ideal existence over years and years of sleepless nights in industry. Or I could just marry it early. Thanks for taking someone's place at Harvard, Grazie. The greater and more visible the difference in years and status between a man and a woman, the more it strikes others as transactional. True, but she has no problem in actually doing it, because I'm 27 now, she says, and most women my age have partners. These days, girls become partners quite young. The problem with a partner, however, is if you're equal in all things, you compromise in all things, and men are too skilled at taking. Okay, she goes on. Bear with me. My husband, who's older, struck me as so finished, formed, analyzable for compatibility. He bore the traces of other women who had improved him. My husband isn't my partner. He's my mentor, my lover. And only in certain contexts, my friend. I'll never forget it, how he showed me around our first place like he was introducing me to myself. This is the wine you'll drink, where you'll keep your clothes. We vacation here. This is the other language we'll speak. You'll learn it. And I did. By opting out of partnership in my 20s, I granted myself a kind of compartmentalized, liberating selfishness none of my friends have managed. I am the work in progress, the party we worry about. A surprising dominance. I don't fool myself. My marriage has its cons. There are only so many times one can say thank you, which is literally part of her name, according to her bio, for splendid scenes, fine dinners, before that phrase starts to grate. Mostly, I worry that if he ever betrayed me and I had to move on, I would survive, but would find in my humor, my preferences, the way I make coffee or the bed, nothing that he did not teach, change, mold, recompose, or stamp with his initials. There's more, but that's
enough. She's not making the bed. She is not making the bed, first of all.
What is this? This, let me just tell you something. I had a friend who dated an older man who's very wealthy. And one of the things that drove me crazy about the relationship was I said, he keeps trying to make you into his Eliza Doolittle. You're nobody's Eliza Doolittle. You're a fully formed, strong, independent woman, and you don't need him to show you the wine we're going to drink, the language you'll learn, and you must. What? This is a Harvard student, Bridget, trying to express to us the liberation that comes with being completely submissive and, I guess, losing yourself to a man who's had the luxury of forming his own independent thoughts.
Yeah, it's funny. I was in a relationship like this, like in a younger part of my life with an older man who was very wealthy and wanted me to learn French. And we were in Saint-Tropez, and I've written a lot about this. And he treated me like a pet or like a little entertainer. You know, he found me very, very funny, my backpacking ways and my poverty. And she's really like the sugardaddy.com generation, OnlyFans. I feel like this is you're not pitching anything new here. Marrying a rich old guy is like a tale as old as time. This is not something that is revolutionary by any means. I think just her spin on it is a lot of self-delusion.
Here's the piece that I referenced, MK.
Yeah.
Very soon, we will decide to have children, and I don't panic over last gasps of fun. This is how like this young generation looks at motherhood. Because I took so many big breaths of it early. On the holidays of someone who had worked a decade longer than I had. In beautiful places, when I was young and beautiful. A symmetry I recommend. If such a thing as maternal energy exists, mine was never depleted. I spent the last nearly 7 years supported more than I support, and I am still not as old as my husband was when he met me. So that's the thing. Get out there, as I said, before the elderly age of 28, right? And make sure your beautiful selfies have the right background, because when you're ancient, like the three of us on this screen, it's over.
Right.
There's a lot of that messaging.
Yeah, a lot. Like, I mean, do your thing, girl. Enjoy. But like, it's just not my kind of shallow. Like, I'm like hot and no 401k. I want over older and richer. Like, that's fine with me. That's why I make a living, you know? That's that freed me up. I just think all this messaging, by the way, that some people seem to think might encourage women voters to vote for the people that they prefer, that it's like everything is over when you're 28 and a half, so you better get it done before then. In my personal life has just not been the case. I've lived several chapters. I've enjoyed all of them. And the idea of making sure that someone else takes care of the first independent chapter of my life doesn't sound appealing to me. I enjoyed finding my way.
Yeah.
Right. Remember, I mean, being in your young 20s and being kind of lost and having to pay for your first rent bill. Yeah. And I remember when I moved to Chicago for law school, I was dirt poor because I was funding my own law school and I didn't have any money. And I literally had an old like love seat that my mother gave me and a mattress that went on the floor and two milk crates with a TV that had antenna. All right. That's how old I am. And antenna. The milk crates. I was so happy. I had a box wine in the fridge. I felt like a grown up. There was no one taking care of me. I took care of me. I loved every second of the climb. And she talks about it like it's something to escape, Bridget. Like it's, this is, you're kind of a loser if you don't take the shortcut where you can just be beautiful wherever you go.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the stuff we're covering, it seems almost conflicting. You kind of came up through this like boss bitch air, you know, the height of it in a man's world, essentially. And we are all a bit, you know, we're ancient and geriatric on this panel. So we came up through this time where you did have to try and fight like a man, and it was a bit more of an aggressive feminism. And now I'm seeing this big blowback where, you know, there's the trad wife rhetoric that we hear constantly, and that you're pretty much dusty and done at the age of 30. And like, MK, I have had many lives and I am a late bloomer. I had my first child at 42 years old, and I feel bad for women who get this messaging, like, go find somebody to take care of you and just give up before you even get started. Because for me, like you, my 20s, I had a box, you know, side table out of a box and a blow up mattress, and that struggle and hustle really helped me find myself. And it also helped me really identify with people who are struggling and trying to make it on their own, because I've been there. I've been too broke to buy shampoo. And I've also been in a situation like her where I had everything taken care of. And I remember being more depressed and lost than I ever had been in my life in that situation. And I remember looking out at the Mediterranean and thinking, like, this is rock bottom. Even though it sounds ridiculous, it really was an internal, I had completely lost myself. And this just kind of, in some ways, this article sounds a bit like a cope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, the guy she married is only 37. Like, he's only 10 years older than she talks about him like she's found this 60-year-old like he's sugar 50. Daddy at age 20.
Yeah.
It's not what happened. But yeah, what were you going to say, MK?
No, the pendulum just swings too hard in our cultural conversations, right? So it has to go from boss bitch to like, and that did devalue some of the work that women did at home raising children. And I do want to send the message, but it's different than the trad wife thing, which is like, I got married, I had a partner, I raised these kids, I enjoy it. Like, this is part of the great adventure of my life. It wasn't the end of joy. And also, it's coupled with some other things and some independence and things that I want to teach my children. Also, the idea that you have to be pretty to enjoy the beauty of God's earth is so sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad. You've got your whole life. It is a privilege to age, to get to the later years. Enjoy what is in front of your eyes the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, she's fine. She's an attractive woman, but like, I expected more for somebody who was bragging about how beautiful she was in front of the beautiful. I'm not going to lie. I did.
That's just politics. You got to manage those expectations.
Yeah, I'm just saying. All right. No, all of this brings me to my friend, Charlie Kirk, who I think I've seen both of you guys ripping on online. And he's taking a fair amount of incoming for his comments on young women. And I will start this by saying, I love Charlie. He says a lot of controversial things, but I think he's absolutely beautiful. Beautiful. That's, I'm looking, I'm thinking at my other, he's not beautiful. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Maybe his wife finds him beautiful. And here is what he said in part about young women.
If you are a 32-year-old young lady who went to college, who has a nice apartment, a corporate job, and cats, you know, you're a Democrat voter, right? What's amazing is once they get married, they become 50-50. Once they have kids, they become like right wing about by 20 points. We basically told a great generation of young women, don't get married, don't have kids, go get a corporate job. And it's created mass political hysteria. And then in their early 30s, they get really upset because they say, you know, the boys don't want to date me anymore because they're not at their prime. And people get mad when I say that. Well, this is true. If you're in your early 30s, I'm sorry. It's like you're not as attractive in the dating pool as you were in the early 20s. But again, you have your corporate job and cats. So I thought you know. And I feel sorry for a lot of these young ladies. They email me all the time and they say, Charlie, I'm broken down in tears. I'm 33. I earn $130,000 a year. I travel a lot. And I have no one to share my life with. And I hope they find somebody in time. And that's why they always frame it. They're like, I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time. It's like, well, the culture did this to you, but you also made a decision. You made a decision consciously to not date with the intent to marry. and it creates a lot of bad consequences. I'm not saying that every young woman is called necessarily to be a mother, but almost every single one is, and almost every single one deep down wants to be a mother, and they're told, you know, hey, I want it all. I want it all the time. You need to ask, if you had to choose, which would it be, a great, amazing career or a beautiful, healthy family? And they're never actually presented with that binary.
Bridget's sitting back with her head back in her.
Bridget, I'm just so over this whole, oh, it's just so gross to me, all of it. Like, first of all, you're not old and dusty if you're 32. Again, it makes me mad. The focus is never on the quality of men. What are the men like now? Why don't we ever discuss what the condition of the men is in this situation? Also, these women who are like 32, and it's not necessarily because they're not in their prime that people don't want to date them. It's because they're mentally ill often. There's also just a general craziness. I mean, yeah, when you do look at the numbers, it's wild. Like, it's single liberal women who are kind of single-handedly all voting Democratic across the board. And I do think, even just from seeing responses to certain pieces and whatnot, that they do feel like the culture has lied to them, and that but why not both? Like, it's not a binary. You don't have to choose between having a child and having a career. You can do both. And the fact that it's being presented as even there's some binary that a woman has to choose makes me insane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what Charlie
was talking about. I mean, I understand what he's saying. I think you understand what he's saying too, which is, I've had women come up to me and say the same thing, that they were sold a bill of goods, you know, get a job, be a badass, be a boss, be a girl boss. And then they realized they weren't fulfilled and time had gone by. And especially, I don't know about 32, but you know, you get to 38, which is how old I was when I had my first child. And it's not wrong that it's much more difficult to conceive a baby at 38 than it is at 28. That's just facts. That's biology. And then they worry. They're like, wait a minute, what did I do? Did I miss my window? This is why a lot of women are now freezing their eggs young. And I do think that these young women were done a disservice, MK, by messaging on the front of Ms. Magazine and shows and so on for a long time about how what's worthy, what's valued is a job. That's what we care about. The job fair will be crammed down your throat with all of the girl bosses, and there will never be a stay-at-home mom who parades across the stage to say, this is why I made the choice I did, and raising my family has been spectacular for me.
No, I think some of that is true, and I want to have empathy for those women. I want those women to come with me on this journey. One of the things that post-COVID I worried about is that, like, there is increased mental illness, but you don't get people out of their anxiety by yelling at them that they shouldn't be anxious, right? We have to be a little bit more compassionate than that. And one of the ways that I hope to message to these women is not to say it's all over for you and I'm going to make fun of your sadness and your cats, but to say, I have enjoyed my adventure. I love parenting my children. I have 4 children, which is the number that people go, what happened there? What's your religion? What's happening? And the answer is, I have 4 children because they are fun. They are fun. Yeah. And this era offers me more flexibility as a mom than any era before now. And I get to live that cool journey. Now, if Charlie Kirk had said that, maybe you get a couple people
I think his criticism was mostly of apartment. These leftist women, and he criticizes leftist men with their man buns too. To your point, Bridget, of like, who exactly are they going to get to partner with and father their children? So he is tough on his own sex as well.
By the way, can I also just shout out my husband, an empirical 10, who I married at the age of 39. So have hope, ladies.
Same. Honestly, I met Doug when I was 35. We got married when I was 37, and we had babies at 38, 40, and 42. And I have to say to this woman who wrote the cut thing, to Grazie, I don't know if that's yours, is her handle or what. All stages have been awesome. And Doug is very hot. So, you know, screw you. We're still looking good in front of the beautiful St. Bart's background. You don't have to only be 20, right? Like, just try a little harder. Go ahead, Bridget.
I just think that you're not giving people an off ramp. So if you are mocking them and saying, oh, you're crazy and your cats and you're aged out at 32, what aren't you supposed to try to open the tent and be saying like, okay, so maybe you're feeling, if these women are calling you and saying, I feel regret, shouldn't you be offering them some kind of hope, offering them some kind of salvation, offering them something instead of mockery and derision?
Acknowledging their reality, because there are a lot of women in their 20s who would have loved to have found a partner and gotten married. And they're looking at, you know, around at 34, like, where are they? Where are they? Right? Like, that those women don't need to be mocked. I think he's thinking about a particular brand of lecturing leftists who then turn around and realize their messaging didn't pan out. Okay, stand by. There's so much more to get to, so much more goodness. Don't go anywhere. MK Ham and Bridget, stay with us.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on SiriusXM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the SiriusXM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Everyone is still abuzz in the Northeast here, where there was an earthquake that started in, it was in New Jersey, but it was felt in the New York metropolitan area where I am in Connecticut, of course, across New Jersey and places of Pennsylvania. And this guy, Alex Cohen on Twitter, tweeted out, F it, best New York City earthquake memes thread. And he's just going through a few of the reactions online. Okay, let's see. It's a text exchange. We just had an earthquake, LOL. Person responds, no way. Yeah, it was a 4.8 and lasted like 10 seconds. Pretty sweet. Response, sounds like someone I know. Okay, let's see. About to, did you just feel that earthquake my way back into her life? Then there's a site called Earthquake. Did anyone just feel that? And somebody responds, yes. Does anyone know any single men aged 25 to 50? I haven't been on a date in a while, and that earthquake made me think maybe I should kick this life partner search up a notch. This is not a dating site. People are losing it. It's a big deal for us Northeasterners who just don't get this kind of fun every once in a while. I mean, again, I hope everybody's safe. I haven't heard any reports at 4.7. There shouldn't be too much fallout, but we'll see. In any event, probably the most exciting weather-wise thing we've had in a while.
Okay. My girl was ready to start her intentional dating journey. That was she's turning the page.
What do you mean?
So she had a taste of mortality and she decided I'm going to find a life partner, and that's what we're encouraging folks to do.
Yes, exactly.
We need more earthquakes.
Speaking of dating, do you know who the Hensel twins are?
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, conjoined twins.
We're going here. So they are conjoined twins. And it's very rare for conjoined twins to make it, in, like to live.
Yeah.
But these two have. They're 34 years old. They are America's most famous conjoined twins, says the Daily Mail. Abby and Brittany Hensel. They actually had their own reality show. They're from Minnesota. And they... or one just got married, which is so confusing. How does it work? So I'm going to show you a graphic of what body parts they share. They have two distinct heads
two distinct hearts, two esophaguses, two gallbladders, two stomachs, three kidneys, but then things merge. They have one large intestine, two stomachs, but only one large intestine and one small intestine, one pelvis, two legs, of course, one bladder, but like basically from the intestines down, they look like a single person, like just one person. And they also say that Brittany, who's the left twin, cannot feel anything on the right side of the body. And Abigail, the right twin, can't feel anything on the left side of the body. For tasks such as replying to emails, they use the keyboard and respond as one. And there are other examples of some of the things they do together from their show. I'll give you an example. This is how they drive, SOT 7.
I think we're good drivers, but we have two licenses. And when we got our driver's license, we each had to take the test. We both passed. Abby is control of the gas and the brakes. And then we both steer, obviously. And then I'm in charge of the clicker for the blinker. So.
The challenges these girls have faced. Okay, this is how they type on the computer, SOT 9.
But when we type, but we say what we're going to say out loud, like we speak it, and then we type it. And if, like, we have different opinions on something, we'll be like, Abby says this and Brittany says that.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, here is after they got a job as math specialist teachers. SOT 10.
Hi, teacher.
So we got a job, which is really exciting. We are fourth and fifth grade math specialists. So we'll have two classes of math. It's part-time, which is nice. So we'll be kind of transitioning into the teaching world.
There's so much stuff.
This is actually
do we really need this stuff?
Probably.
So there's a lot of stuff you need when you're a teacher, obviously. We didn't really know what we were going to need or like get or need or whatever, but we just went just to at least get started. We have two contracts, but we're only part-time, so obviously we don't get full salary. But what they're doing is just splitting it in two and giving me half and Brittany half. So right now that's good.
That is absolutely fascinating how they both jump in with an at the exact same time when the other one is speaking. I mean, it really is almost like, you know, two different versions of the same person. And they literally are. Well, now they're in the news, and obviously they've put themselves out publicly. Otherwise I wouldn't be talking about them, but they've put themselves out there and one of them got married. And of course that's let everybody ask, what does that mean? Like, how can one of them get married? Abby is the one who's the right twin. And we're showing a video of them dancing at their wedding. That is the first dance. Abby got married. And I guess the sister, Brittany, who's on the left, isn't married. But, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but they do share everything down south in Rio. But it's unclear who feels what happens down there and what happens to the other one. Like the one here on the outside, Abby is the one who's married. The one on the inside of that shot is not married. What happens with the other? I think everyone's got to go along with it when they consummate the marriage and all that.
Yes.
I'm so confused. I am amazed. I've never heard of these young women before. Have you heard of these women?
My take is that it's the only acceptable use of they, them.
Like, yes,
this is correct. The appropriate use of it.
Yeah.
This makes sense. It's not hurting my brain to use they, them pronouns in this instance. I can make sense of it. It is accurate. It is appropriate. I wonder if they're mad that like the gender people took their pronouns.
Yeah. Well, I am whenever I'm a member of a group. I feel like my pronoun has been stolen. I can't help but think, MK, looking at them, I'm like, we got people bitching that like they're, you know, they've got like the disorder where you pull out your hair. Shut up and take a look at the Hensel twins because they seem happy. They actually seem pretty delightful. I mean, talk about life's challenges.
Yeah, so the name didn't ring a bell right away, but I have known about them for years. They're younger than I am, but I remember reading about them as a kid, probably in People magazine or something, because they're a medical miracle that they have survived. But I think they're an emotional miracle, that their resilience is so clear. These young women are enjoying life, seemingly. Obviously, they've done everything together for the entirety of that life. So I'm sure them navigating whatever the arrangements are is something that, frankly, they have had a lot of practice at. And to watch them make a life in the way that they have is kind of amazing. And we had a whole discourse on Twitter like 2 weeks ago about how actually getting DoorDash was necessary for people because they have too much anxiety to microwave a dinner or go shopping. And I was like, guys, we are really teetering on the edge here. And I would advise that those folks look to these twins for some inspiration, because they have whole jobs and meal making and getting married under control.
Well, think about it, because you got people out there like, oh, you know, they stared at me because I'm different, or I'm other. I'm, you know, I'm a minority in a majority white classroom, whatever it is. You want to talk about getting stared at? These two are not hibernating at home. Got a job teaching in a school. They're out there driving. There's no way that literally everybody in the grocery store is not staring at them. We show that the video of them doing their shopping. They get used to it. You deal with it. You get past adversity. And this is about as challenging as an adversity as I've ever seen. I want to know more about the husband. How do you fall in love only with the one? Does the other one know to be quiet when like the bonding's happening? You kind of try to fade into the distance when they have their first kiss. Are you like, I can see you. Like, what is her role?
Yeah.
Yeah. My husband was like, that's one way to find your way into a threesome.
It's true.
Yeah.
By the way, I should note there's a viral post going around that proclaims to be an explanation of their sex life, which is not real. So just if you guys have seen that, an FYI.
Well, wait, is it that? Because the Daily Mail has a whole write-up on it.
Apparently,
it's not real.
No, the Northwestern University person?
No, there might be some medical speculation with an expert, but I think the one that allegedly came from them.
Oh, okay.
I
trust the Daily Mail. Yeah. Daily Mail consults with Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine and the professor of clinical medicine, medical humanities, and bioethics, Alice Drager, who says they share one set of genitals, that they would both feel any touching down there. Whether both would experience the big O at the same time, we don't know. And do they experience it? Like, do they both have sensation? They have separate brains, but this shared reproductive situation. So who knows? Drager, from her studies, assumes conjoined twins like these likely have less sex than average people, you think? Not just because finding a partner is harder. We know you don't need a degree from Northwestern. But because they may not need romantic partners as much as everyone else, because they are literally attached to a soulmate. Think about that.
The funniest reaction was all the women being like, they can find a husband and I can't. That was like the best reaction on all of social media. It's like, they can find someone and I can't find a good man out there.
That's a good point. I don't know. I wish them the best. It's extremely rare to have conjoined twins survive. Usually,
just imagine never being alone.
Long ago.
Yeah.
That sounds horrible to me.
Yeah, you're never alone, ever. Not for one second of your entire life.
I would not like that. I like my alone time. I get grumpy if I don't get it. I mean, maybe it's different when you actually share half a body with the person. You know, like she's tired too. You know, are the personalities sharply different? Would they argue? You know,
they share a bloodstream too.
Yeah.
Is one like, stop drinking so much? I'm sick of going to the toilet. Yes. You know, like, get it together. Like, can you imagine the fights they must have? Anyway, we'll see. I hope it lasts. I have to give the audience an update about another odd pairing that we brought to them. And that is Gypsy Rose, the young girl, now a woman, who was the victim of a crazed mother who either had Munchausen's by proxy, you know, she was making the daughter sick, or just was a big fraud and wanted the daughter to act sick. I don't totally understand what the mother's motivation was to this day, but she was completely ruining Gypsy Rose's life and kept her in a wheelchair and was pumping her through full of medications, having her have surgeries that she didn't need. Crazy that the medical community was complicit, and Gypsy Rose wound up getting a guy to kill the mom. And the guy went to jail forever, and Gypsy Rose just got out. And she's like a tiny, high-pitched voice gal. I'm sure there's been some stunting from all the mother's mistreatment. But while in prison, she found a husband. Here's a clip of them when she got out just a couple months ago.
Ryan, how are you dealing with the newfound fame and being in the spotlight?
I knew who I married. She was like, are you sure? Are you sure? And of course I was. I mean, I'm in love with this girl.
Well, you're already clapping back on social media. I've seen those. I do believe y'all had some spicy things to say to each other.
Well, we're newly married, like, you know.
I mean,
we're married.
What's hard for me is watching, you know, the negative comments towards him. I can handle negative comments towards me because I don't care. But when it's about somebody that I love, I want to clap back. And that was my, you know, clap back a little bit. I'm going to come to his defense. He's my man. Like, that's what wives do.
Okay, she's referring to a post in which she clapped back to somebody who was criticizing, saying, Ryan, to her husband, don't listen to the haters. I love you. You love me. We owe no one anything. Our families who matters, blah, 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 blah. Besides, they jealous because you are rocking my world every night. Yeah, I said it. The D is fire. Well, it turns out their marriage didn't last. It's over already.
Oh, no.
Apparently, the D is not fire. And the relationship is in embers. Shockingly, their prison marriage did not work out, which, you know, I'm not sure what the odds are, but I'm going to have to guess they weren't very good to begin with. I never understand people who marry people who are in prison, but happened, failed again.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked a little bit like the Hansel husband.
Oh, he did. Usually it's a woman on the outside though, right? Like marrying the Menendez brothers. I don't know. So, like, there are women who really get off on like bad boys and I'm going to be the one who changes them. This is something else. I don't know. Gypsy Rose has got like 10 million followers on Insta. It might be 20, something huge. And I'm sure she's a moneymaker. Not to falsely impugn Brian, who I'm sure, given the fire comment, had other advantages. But in any event. Okay, moving on. Sex and the City's coming back. Did you know that? It's being re-released on Netflix in the same way Friends was just re-released on Netflix. And there is a real question about whether it can make it in modern day America. Our old intern for this show, Ricky Schlott, who is amazing and incredibly talented, writes for the New York Post sometimes. And she's got a piece saying Gen Z is not going to be able to handle this. And apparently she's younger, you know, she was our intern. And she sat and she watched all of the Sex and the City episodes and thought Gen Z is going to have a total meltdown when they meet Carrie Bradshaw and this cast of characters, talking about how this, you know, looked at through our 2024 eyes is not going to age well. She has no problem with it. She's not woke and she's not annoying. But she is pointing to scenes like this one saying, how's this going to go over? Stop 14.
He's a bisexual.
Well, I could have told you that, sweetie. He took you ice skating, for God's sake.
You know, that generation is all about sexual experimentation. All the kids are going bi.
So what, if all the bi kids are jumping off a bridge, you're gonna do that too?
I'm a trisexual. I'll try anything once.
When did this happen? When did the sexes get all confused?
Somewhere between Gen X and Gen Y, they blended and made XY.
I'm not even sure bisexuality exists. I think it's just a layover on the way to gay town.
I'm very into labels. Gay, straight. Pick a side and stay there.
Then there's this with Samantha moving into, I think it was, downtown, the meatpacking district, and encountering, quote, trannies.
Shut up, you bitches! I call the cops!
Fuck my car!
Yeah, keep talking, I'll come down there and cut it off for you!
The next Saturday, Samantha decided to throw a kiss and makeup party for the Up My Ass players and their friends.
Different times.
Already you've got people commenting. She's got them in her piece. Lark, I can just see the Gen Z discourse on Sex and the City. Oh no. There's Emily watching Sex and the City on Netflix. And I don't know, you guys, Carrie seems really problematic. And then there's more. Like already they're having a negative reaction because it's not woke. And they talk the way we've all been talking forever prior to the past year.
Did you like that show?
Yeah, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Did you?
It made me laugh. It was fun. Why?
I don't know. I just hated it. I never liked it. I never got into it. It was like a show that always just rubbed me the wrong way. And it's weird because I grew up in that time when it was like all my friends had the martini parties and the Cosmos and all of it. And I never got into it.
I'm in the OG.
I didn't like the reboot where it was all wokeified and annoying. Go ahead, yeah. MK.
No, I'm in the middle. I was a hate watcher of Sex and the City, and I considered a lot of it a guide to maybe how not to live. But depending on the character.
But I mean, I also love Real Housewives, but yes, I'm not like taking life tips from it.
But I think we should wait to see with Gen Z here because.
Yeah.
Gen Z, there are young people who love Friends. That's why it took off on Netflix, right? And I think some of that may be a longing for a time where you don't have to police your own thoughts at every single second, because that conversation they had at the table was fairly tame. It wasn't disrespectful. And what it was kind of like a, what's exactly going on here? Am I allowed to ask questions? That's the thing people don't feel like they're allowed to do anymore. And a lot of Gen Z is bothered by that, even if they do it sort of quietly being bothered by it. Maybe this is their revolution.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are we talking about Gen Z or are we talking about like Gen Alpha? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, maybe a little younger. Gen Z is, but I don't know. Members of Gen Z, the older Gen Zers, for something different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the younger Gen Zers are sick of woke. They've had it. But I think the older Gen Zers are hashtag the problem.
The older Gen Zers or the younger millennials? I always felt like
that's the same general group, right? I mean, I just think those are the lecturing ones who want to change everything and want to pretend that we were never politically incorrect and, you know, all that. Like the lecturers, like, I don't know if they're going to enjoy this or not. What I loved about it is I loved the scenes of New York City. I loved the fashion. I thought it was funny. Yep. Like that was clever dialogue. I think bi is just a pause on the bridge to gaydom. You know, I think most women I know, if they're dating a guy and he says, I'm bi, they're like, you're gay. That's just, like, bi is just something gay men say to make it sound like less shocking. These are feelings that a lot of people have and they weren't afraid to say them. It's only today's day and age that you have to like guard your opinions. Like there's something wrong with the way you feel about these issues, which are unsettled and unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird. I've been doing comedy a lot in Austin, which is a younger, more left-wing crowd. And they do seem like they're loosening up a little. So maybe because the culture is loosening up, maybe you age out of some of your obnoxiousness. I always joke that I was like AOC in my 20s. I don't know if they're just getting older. It does... It does seem like they're wanting to laugh and loosen up a little bit and let go of some of that annoyingness.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good news is that because there's a younger generation who does seem to be like more the younger Gen Z or Alpha that does seem to be more open to free speech ideas and conversations, that eventually being the speech police might become chuggy, as the children say, and it will be out of style, which is what we're looking for.
I see it even with the teens. They seem to be reacting to a lot of the like woke, quote unquote, wokeness, the younger ones, Alpha and whatnot. And they seem like they're pretty chill. So I'm hoping maybe I think if people do jump on it and make it problematic, it will just be for clicks and clout chasing.
I guess it depends on where you live, because I would say for sure where we are in Connecticut, I'm seeing a blowback to woke. You know, among younger kids and my friends who have college kids, they'll talk about how they're just over it, even at the college level. But there was this piece in The New Yorker talking about the meltdown in a liberal town. And that town was Amherst, Western Mass. I don't get the joke because they say, isn't it Amherst? Because they say the only thing silent, they say, a joke you hear a lot is that in Amherst, Only the H is silent. I don't know if that's a joke on like the Massachusetts, the Boston accent, Amherst, yeah. Whatever.
Amherst.
They're having a problem at their middle school. And this, for people like that, I think the three of us, was completely predictable.
Yeah.
I mean, you read this and you're like, sure. Yeah, this is exactly how it would go down. Where there's been a complete meltdown. It's a very lengthy piece, but it's about how, it's about trans students and their annoying parents versus Black administrators who apparently haven't been supportive of enough of their trans expression. And of course, the trans students are saying, you know, you need to support me and affirm. And the Black administrators and their allies are saying, you people are racists. This is what happens when a Black person gets into power, especially a Black woman. And they're eating their own. They're killing one another. Everyone's losing their jobs. You know, and of course, then predictably in another lane, like Abigail Schreier's recent book, Bad Therapy, you've got the trans student who the more kindness and like darkly lit room, comforting spaces you provide this kid, the more depressed the kid gets. It doesn't help. You lean into this kid's unwellness and so does the kid. It's everything that we talk about when it comes to wokeology. Manifesting in the absolute explosion of this middle school and its administration. And what do I see in here? Nothing about, are the kids okay? Are the kids learning? This is all about adults and their stupid infighting over these issues. So what did you guys make of it?
Katie Herzog had a great tweet, and she said, this is an amazing glimpse into what happens when liberal white people with We Believe signs posted outside their craftsman homes are confronted with actual diversity. And I think that is exactly what you're seeing. And anyone who's been in the space and has been in the discourse could see this coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like a hierarchical fight, MK, where they're forced to choose what's more important, the trans thing or the Black thing, because that's what they're really looking at. And they're frozen with fear.
No, it's an ideology of division inherently, right? If you do a privilege walk in your college freshman class where you step forward if you have two parents and you step back if you had a single mom and you go forward if your parents had a college education or whatever, the whole point of it is at the end of it, you're all standing in separate places. You all see very clearly how divided you are. That is the opposite of the philosophy when I was a college freshman, when we all called the dogs together at the University of Georgia, and that was how we found common ground. And then you have your bull sessions in your college dorm room and you learn things from each other because you're experiencing different people without getting this as your first introduction. And that now is how students must interact, right? Is like your thing that makes you different and is the thing that has cachet. And if you don't have that thing and you're not emphasizing that thing, which hopefully is like a disorder of some kind, I feel like that's sort of a bonus, then you have nothing, right? You're just, oh, are you just like a normal white chick? That's not going to work for you. And so it really incentivizes some very bad stuff for students who are for kids who aren't fully formed. And these adults are enabling all of it to the detriment of everyone.
That was the crazy part in that article.
I start their college application essays with, I came from a happy home with two parents who loved each other and us. And taught us to love each other and America. Where does that work to get you in?
That's the diversity hire now.
Yeah.
Yes.
That goes on the trash pile, guys.
Yeah, that's like liberty. You know, it's sad, but it's true. Anyway, this is such a great example of what will happen if you focus on identity and whether it's your race or your gender or whatever it is. You will implode. You will implode badly. Everyone will lose their careers, including your most favored races and sexes. And like, no one will be spared because it's headed for destruction. It's a mutually assured destruction game because eventually you run out of white Republicans to blame. And you're going to be stuck only with other woke liberals who also are members of privileged classes, and catastrophe will follow. So might as well give up the game now and get back to merit. Get back to merit. This brings me to a thing I've been trying to get to all week. There was a piece, speaking of women's basketball, as we did at the top, by someone named Lindsay Schnell, who happens to be white. And Lindsay wanted to weigh in on women's basketball and the race of the biggest players in it. Caitlin Clark is the biggest star in the headed for the WNBA. She's now at Iowa. And she's projected number one overall. But there are two up-and-comers who are a year younger than she is, or maybe more. I think they're a year younger, who are now going to be the new faces of basketball. There's Juju Watkins, who's the nation's second leading scorer after Caitlin. And then there's Notre Dame point guard Hannah Hidalgo, who's the other favorite for freshman of the year. Okay, so she's a little younger. This is what Lindsay concludes. Not lost on any of the power brokers in the game, both of these up-and-coming players are Black. And in a game built by Black women, it matters that the faces of the future look like the faces of the past. She's openly saying, I'm really glad Caitlin Clark, I made that mistake, is moving on because she's white. And it's pissing me off that we don't have a Black face as the star of women's basketball because of faces of the past. How insane is this? What if white people took this attitude in, I don't know, baseball or lacrosse? You could go down the list. This is so offensive. Yeah. And her disgusting racism against her own race will be given a total pass, MK, because it's anti-white, which is fine.
No, I think you're right. It will get a pass. It's disgusting. It's fairly open about being disgusting. And the thing is, look, Caitlin Clark's just really, really good, guys. Deal with it. That J is fire, to throw it back. But like, she's really, really good. But here's the thing. Angel Reese is Black, and we talk about her in conjunction with Caitlin Clark all the time because they are an intense and interesting rivalry between two really good athletes. And a lot of the blowback on this seems to be like, so women's basketball is getting all this attention, and then you're having all these conversations about whether the sportsmanship is good enough, and is Caitlin the GOAT, or does someone else need to be considered? And you know what those sound like? They sound like the conversations that dudes have about men's basketball all the time, right? This is just making it for women's sports. This is what it looks like. It looks like controversy. It looks like polarization. It looks like a bunch of people who aren't necessarily always nice dropping a bunch of really amazing shots. Congratulations.
She's lamenting, Bridget, as women's basketball grows in popularity, white players get the most attention. Really? Do they? Or is it just this one white player who happens to be incredibly good?
Yeah, I mean, didn't she score more points than men or women in a recent game ever?
She did the 3-point competition with Steph Curry. I watched this with my kids. She was right behind him. He won, but it was tight. She was respectable, and no one could have any reaction to that other than props to her. Unless you're a lunatic like Lindsay Schnell lamenting how, as the sport grows in popularity, the white players get the attention.
This is the most I've ever heard about women's basketball ever. So I do think, like, I agree, it's progress that we're even having this controversial. I'm not really watching women's basketball. And my father was watching it the other night, and I was like, oh, that's really cool that you're into this game and you want to know who's winning. That's amazing.
My EP tells me it's Sabrina Ionescu who did that Steph Curry thing. I see all white people the same. I confuse them for one another. That's my racism. But my point is, like, this girl was amazing. So why wouldn't we cover this girl, Sabrina, being able to hang with Steph Curry? Does it count that she was up against a Black man? Does that make this woman feel any better? Like, why must we factor in? And you look at the WNBA, I'm going to guess that there are mostly Black faces. So who cares? Yes. There's a couple of white women who are actually doing really well in that. Great. Good for them. I mean, it used to be that tennis was entirely white. And then we got wonderful players, like very talented Black players who were featured nonstop. I don't remember Lindsay writing an article about how we really needed to change. She was relieved that in a game built by white women, it matters that the faces of the future continue to look white. Where's that piece, Lindsay? Nowhere, because no one other than an abject racist would say such shit, but you get away with it. If the targeted group is white, I'm sick of it. All right, last but not least, you know, some of us used to worry about the pants that would give us what we used to affectionately call plumber's ass, right? And who doesn't, you don't want to, like, you lean over, unless you're Monica Lewinsky at the White House as an intern, you do not wish to show your thong or your butt crack upon leaning over until now. The latest fashion trend is, this is according to The Cut, with full frontal nudity now played out to drum up the same level of attention they've become accustomed to, celebs have gone in search of a fresh take on the provocative attire, intentionally flashing some intergluteal cleft, butt cleavage, they call it. And it's all the rage. They go through the number of celebrities who are engaging in this because I guess now it's not enough to be basically nude. Look at this. Is that, who is that? Oh my God. You could, that's not even cleavage. That's like her whole butt. It's not enough to be basically nude, you know, on these like little mesh one pieces that these women wear with a teeny tiny thong and a barely there bra. Now we have to openly show ass and ass crack. That's Kanye's wife, of course, never one to shy away from showing her naked body. So is this a trend you can get behind, Bridget?
I mean, this is a trend that is just coming back. I'm a 90s kid. This was like all the rage. We had the low rise jeans and the tramp stamps.
And the whale tail. Is
yeah, this was a 90s thing.
Butt crack. I was there
totally
in the 90s.
A 90 thing. No, it's we showed so butt crack.
Tramp stamps
were
above
all
the
rage.
Come on, back me up. The tramp stamp goes above the crack. It doesn't
it
go
does,
across.
No, it does. But the whale tail... The whale tail was the thong coming out of your pants. So you're, technically the butt crack was a little covered, but it was a suggestion, certainly more than a suggestion of that. Not that I indulged in it because I think this is dumb. I don't think your butt crack looks great out for everybody.
Didn't Alexander McQueen? No, he had the whole fashion thing and it was like a big deal.
Yes.
Because I loved the low-rise jeans because I'm super short and it made me look taller. It was incredible. So I had them with like right around the hips.
Okay. I'm very interested now that you've become a mother, whether you feel the same, because I don't know any mother who can wear low-rise jeans.
No, I'm not wearing low-rise jeans now, but I did when I was super like in my teens and 20s. Yeah. You can't wear them.
I
wouldn't wear them now.
And I can't
now.
But
have you seen the shorts these teen girls are wearing?
They're not shorts. They're like a belt.
Yeah.
It's the tiniest thing. They let it all hang out. I'm against this. I think the ass should be kept covered. It should be something private. I don't really view it as like all that sexy. I don't
Me
know.
Neither.
It brings up like a lot. You see the ass, you think about a lot of things. It's not just sex. I'm not sure if that's hot.
Mm. Well, and a low back, like an extreme low back dress is really hot, but it's like once you go... All it's like, why? The suggestion is the sexy part. Like, let's just leave it where it is.
Those days are gone. I mean, Bianca Censori is a great example of it. Like her latest pictures out in the Daily Mail with Kanye. That woman, she doesn't wear clothes. I mean, I can look like Bianca Censori tomorrow. What I'm going to do is I'm to put on an old pair of my legs pantyhose, nude, and then I'm going to grab a pillow off the couch and hold it in front of my boobs. And then I'll look just like her. I don't understand. Like, any woman can do this, but she gets this attention because I'll tell you exactly what's happening. He's letting the paparazzi know where they can see her.
Right, right.
He's making her into what looks like a porn star. And that's what, you know, this is after Kanye went on Tucker's show and railed about how he was so upset about those pictures of his wife, Kim, because he found Jesus and he no longer supported those kinds of pictures of his wife. And now... he's got the new wife and he's whoring her around every restaurant in the world and calling the paps because he wants us to see her vag more than her ass crack and her boobs. It's so exploitative.
He's got an album coming out. Kanye always does crazy stuff before an album comes out. This, like, he definitely has an album coming out when this nonsense starts happening around him. I'm like, Kanye's in the news and he's doing crazy stuff and he's exploiting. She always looks like a hostage in all of the pictures.
Yeah,
she looks so it's like sad.
It looks like he just put something on the bed and is like, all right, this is what you're wearing. Get into it.
Look, I get he's made her a star. We know her name. I never knew her name before she married Kanye and started doing this. But I'm tempted. Like, I've thought a few times, I'm not going to do this. But I thought, what if I actually did this? I could put this outfit on. I could. I'm holding it together okay for 53. I could put this outfit on and I could go to dinner. And guess what? I would be all over the Daily Mail too. Is this fulfillment in life? Like for people to oogle you while you're basically naked in public? Is that a win? Is that a big accomplishment? Like any woman, virtually, not any, but like virtually, a lot of women could go out naked to dinner and get press. It's like,
yeah,
they're not desperate anyone. For attention. They stink of desperation.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I did have a memory triggered because we're all old and dusty, as we've discussed, of going into like a gas station or a drugstore and getting that little egg of pantyhose in an emergency, like yes. when I had to be dressed up for a job interview.
Yes,
maybe Kanye should sell those.
You know what? Maybe this is all like a prelude to launching a competitor to Skims, Kim Kardashian's undergarment. Yeah. If that's true, I'm actually going to be respectful of it. I'm actually going to be impressed that he lured us into this business. But I think Kanye's got his own clothing line already. He probably doesn't need a new one. Ladies, what a pleasure. I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you so
too.
Much.
Thank you. I think we solved all the problems.
Clearly.
Feeling good about it. MK Ham and Bridget Fetissy to be continued. See you again soon. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.